Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is
Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short.
Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
All right. Welcome back, juror number 321. This is the time for some individual voir dire questioning of this juror. Juror number 321, I'll note we are, these proceedings, you're not being shown that you would have your responses heard on a broadcast of this. There are some personal topics brought up in the questionnaire, and the prosecutor was questioning whether or not he would prefer to discuss those not in public, and I can stop the broadcast and excuse the public for that section. Generally, do you have a copy of your questionnaire there?
Yes, I do.
All right, the things you discussed on pages 7, 8, and 9, I think particularly on page 9, that's something you're comfortable discussing here in an open forum, or would you prefer to talk about that more in a private setting?
So page 9, Your Honor?
Yes.
You could prefer to do it privately.
Okay. Let's go ahead and do that then. I'm considering we have two left here, maybe going on to 394. If we don't think that'll come up, and then having 321 brought back in to conclude, we could excuse the public and stop the broadcast to include this group. Any objection to changing the order like that?
No objection.
No objection, Judge.
Okay, juror 321, you wouldn't have got to leave any sooner anyway. We're gonna swap you with juror 394 quickly, and then we'll have you right back in here hopefully in 5 minutes or so. Thank you. 394.
394.
Judge Hale. Excuse me, 3.3. I miss.
That's correct. All right, juror 394, thank you for returning for individual voir dire. We've had a few topics come up during the group voir dire, including possibly some bias or hardship issues, and I'll just let the state inquire on either of those topics, and then we'll move on to the next topic if we're still going. So who's going to be conducting that for the state?
I will be, Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead, Ms. Blake.
I'm looking at your questionnaire. I think they gave you a copy of it.
Yes. It's
just for your benefit as well. I am on page 14, and it is question 2. It asks, what have you heard or what do you know about the defendant, Chad Guy Daybell? And your response was, you overheard some people in the jury summons room mention the case, but no details were given, and before today you hadn't heard about the defendant. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Really no information is given. We just were wondering what the
And that's the first time you'd heard of it?
Actually, yes. Yeah.
And then you did indicate that you possibly know a witness, but you're not even sure if it's
The name sounds familiar, but there's really nothing there.
So nothing about possibly knowing him that would cause you any concern?
No.
And then I know we've already gone over this with you, so I just want to double check. In the questionnaire on page 20 on the trial length, you had indicated that you have a vacation scheduled from Saturday, June 1st through Sunday, June 16th, and that you believed that would be week number 10. I think we talked a little bit today, and you indicated it's because it would include travel to and from. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's actually June 6th through 10th, but we need a couple days before or after to get out to Arkansas.
Get to and from?
Yeah.
And you were also asked before, so I just want to verify that this is accurate and that I heard you correctly, that if you were selected to sit on the jury, you would be able to do that and make the arrangements, and you felt you could do that and not be distracted by this by the trip if you were late getting there or if you missed part of it.
Yeah, I mean, if we had to miss it, we would just cancel if we got into it, so that'd be fine.
Do you feel that if you were to run into that, because we're not sure how long the trial will go, but with that being a possibility, if you were to run into that, do you think you would be distracted or potentially hold it against the state or the defendant as you were trying to finish out the trial?
No, I feel like this is important. So, yeah,
sure. Thank you for your answers. I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. White. Mr. Pryor.
I don't need to get into significant detail, but as far as this vacation in Arkansas, again, how long of a vacation is it?
I have 2 weeks off for work, but the actual time we have to be in Arkansas is about 6 days.
And when you say you have to be in Arkansas, is that something that's a family gathering or
it's
a personal?
It's a family reunion.
Okay.
Yeah.
A significant event?
Yeah, it's significant, but I also, I've never done anything like this, and I feel like that's important as well.
Okay. Is it going to cause a distraction to you to miss this significant family event?
No.
Would you rather not go to it and to do this instead?
No.
You'd rather
go to it? I'd rather go to it. Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
But I also know that I'm going to miss it as well.
Right.
So.
And for the most part, you're being noble and you're saying, listen, I have to put aside my personal hardship to attend it or to participate in this process, right?
Correct.
But your preference would be to go to Arkansas.
Absolutely.
And has that trip been paid for? Has there been money expended?
Yes, there's a down payment on an Airbnb, but that can be canceled.
And you can be refunded that money?
Yeah, by a certain date.
Okay. Is that date passed or is it still?
It's still out there.
Okay. Judge, I have nothing else.
All right. Thank you, counsel. The next topic we'll address here with juror 394 relates to questions you answered as to your attitudes regarding the death penalty. Do you recall that section of the questionnaire?
I do.
And to the best of your recollection, are those true and accurate answers in your questionnaire?
Yes.
All right, so the court will advise you that it may be necessary for you to make a determination in this case in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty. So with that in mind, you indicated first that you do support the death penalty. Is that still the way you feel today?
Yes.
And when you were given a choice of selections to describe how you felt about it, you circled on page 13, part C, which I understand are not necessarily your words, but what you said most accurately represents your feelings. You said, quote, "I generally favor the death penalty, but I would base a decision to impose it on the facts, law, and instructions in the case." Is that still an accurate representation of how you feel about that topic?
Yes.
Okay, one more question then. Would you always be in favor of the death penalty in every case where a murder has been committed?
No.
Okay, so you would agree.
Well, let me
go ahead.
Try that. I mean, I would be in favor if it was the defendant was guilty of the crime. I was thinking in some case where there's some kind of defense to do.
Okay, so if you were given instructions as to when and if you would consider it, you would follow those instructions regardless of your views. Okay, and again, to be clear then, you're not saying you would think it's appropriate in every case, regardless of instructions, only in cases where you were instructed to consider it?
Can you rephrase that?
So you wouldn't presume that it should always be the penalty in any murder case. You would follow directions or instructions as to this particular case.
Yes.
All right, well, that will conclude the court section of voir dire on that topic. Does the state have any questions about that?
No questions on that topic, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Pryor, any questions for this juror?
Sir, again, everybody's answer is correct. Everybody's entitled to their view. We can appreciate that, right?
Yes.
Okay. So when initially I heard you say that if there was a murder involved, and there isn't a self-defense issue, or there isn't an insanity or something like that, you would be inclined to vote for the death penalty. Would that be fair?
Yes.
So aside from any kind of a defense, a legal defense, if it was murder and a murder was committed, and you were given two choices, murder has been proven, and this is not to imply Mr. Daybell's guilt or innocence today. I have to ask these questions. You can appreciate that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, thank you. What I'm trying to suggest is that if there was a murder and there had been a conviction, and the jury had decided that there was a murder and there was a conviction and there was no defense issue of any kind, and the court gave you an instruction of life or the death penalty, you would be inclined to say, I'm going to vote for the death penalty. That be fair?
Yes.
So before you go into the jury box and decide what the fate would be, would it be fair that your initial position and your start position is, listen, putting everything aside with a murder conviction, and I'm required to go back in a separate hearing and consider this, my starting spot is the death penalty unless you tell me otherwise. Provide me some other reason why I should not impose the death penalty. Would that be fair, sir?
My opinion is that the just penalty for murder.
Okay.
So based on that, that would be my starting position.
Okay, so you would start with the position that I'm going to impose the death penalty, and that that's it. And I saw that in your questionnaire. And again, everybody has the right to a position. There's no wrong answers here. But your starting position is the death penalty is a just penalty. The court's going to give me the option of life in prison or the death penalty. But because I personally believe that the death penalty is a just punishment for someone who commits murder, my starting position is the death penalty, and then I will then consider whether or not I'm going to impose life in prison. That what I said fair?
After rethinking it, as you give me your explanation there, I guess I'm not set on death penalty. If the court is suggesting either,
right?
I'm not going to necessarily push for death penalty. I'm very open to it. But if there's compelling reasons not, then life in prison is an option as well.
Okay, but I guess I got the impression. I don't want to drag this issue on. I got the impression that initially you said, "Listen, my starting position is going to be the death penalty." But if there are other explanations or there's other evidence that I hear, I would consider changing my position on the death penalty if I were to hear evidence to give me a reason to do that. Would that be fair?
That's correct.
And sir, thank you very much. And please forgive me. I'm trying to just clarify everybody's position. You could appreciate this complicated issue.
Yes.
And Judge, I'm going to move on this issue.
All right, response from the state.
Your Honor, I'm going to ask some questions to rehabilitate.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. You recall when we were in the group setting and we talked about a recipe and following the court instructions that will be given to the jury. Do you feel that once you're given court instructions that you would be able to follow those and that you would in fact follow them?
Yes.
And so recognizing right now you haven't been given all the court instructions regarding imposition of your finding of guilt and or the imposition of the death penalty. Once you were given those instructions, would you follow them?
Yes.
And so when we talk about your willingness to impose the death penalty, if you felt that was appropriate.
Yes.
Would you base that on all of the evidence that's presented in the trial in this matter in both a penalty, or excuse me, in both the guilt and penalty phase?
Yes.
And do you feel that you would keep an open mind and accurately follow the court's instructions in making that decision in determining any penalty if it came to that point? Your Honor, with that information, I'm going to object to the motion to strike.
Very well. The court's considered that. Let me just inquire one last time then of this potential juror. Would you be willing to follow the court's instructions on this issue, regardless of any personal view you have, or do you believe your personal view would somehow prevent you from or impair your ability to follow those instructions?
I'd be able to follow those instructions.
All right. The court has considered the responses given by this juror. The court is going to overrule the motion to strike based on responses to that topic. And juror number 394, you'll return to the jury room here briefly and from there instruct the
judge. One other comment?
Yes.
I did check with my employer and there's no hardship by being at that one. So there's a question before the comment.
Okay, well, thank you for checking into that, volunteering that additional information. We'll note that for the note of counsel. And then we'll return with juror number 321. Start off and see where we're at. All right, counsel, with this juror, if there's any other topics we could hit first before we close the broadcast and excuse the public, take those up.
Judge, I want to delve a little bit more into the hardship.
Okay. Does the state have any questions on hardship bias?
Just a couple of questions at the end of the year.
Okay. Juror 321, thank you for returning. Again, we'll have counsel go into questions relating to potential hardship or bias. After that, we'll talk about the other matters off the record here, the privacy of this juror. Mr. Wixom.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sir. Sir, as I recall, during the group selection process, it came out that you would experience some unpaid time if you're selected to be on the jury. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
And you, at that point, or at least as of this morning, have not been able to determine how much unpaid time. Is that right?
That's correct. I've since messaged my HR.
And I think you said that you were the sole provider for your family.
Yes, like my wife and I are currently separated, so she's working, but I'm head of my own household, but still contribute with everything that's going on there.
So two households, two incomes, is that how that works?
Correct, yes.
Okay. So then as you sit there today, just on that factor alone, do you feel like with the information that you have as you sit there, that serving on this jury for 10 weeks would in fact be a hardship for you?
It would definitely be somewhat of a hardship. I can let my figure out more information from HR to determine how much of a hardship that could be.
So are you leaving it open that if perhaps HR will confirm how much they may pay, and if was it enough that you could still potentially serve without it being a hardship? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's true.
And I guess to clarify, as I've mentioned, other jurors, juror 321, we need to make a decision essentially now on this issue. We don't necessarily have the luxury of finding out, and I understand it would be a difficult task, but if the answer comes back that it's more of a financial hardship than less based on your HR policy, if that were to occur, how would that impact your ability to pay attention and be engaged in this trial and not be concerned about that the whole time?
If I'm a part of this trial, it's not going to affect it at all. 100%.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that response. Apologies for the interruptions, Mr. Woodson. If you have further questions, go on.
That's not the key. And then I did just one more thing that had been you this morning. In your questionnaire, the one thing you did note about hardship was you have several midweek trips planned to go to Oregon to watch your son play ball. Right. Do you feel like with the question that occurred in the explanation, are you satisfied now that that won't be a hardship, or are you still concerned that potentially missing his gains or some will be a hardship?
Like I was explaining before, there's always going to be other times to do it. So I wouldn't consider it a hard, I guess it's kind of relevant to like my situation, you know, it'd be a hardship because I'd love to see my son play, but in terms of being a real hardship on like my life, no, I can't call it a hardship.
Okay. Thank you for that. No, I don't have any more questions on these topics right now.
All right, Mr. Pryor.
And sir, I'm going to start with the baseball. How many children do you have?
I have three.
How long have you been watching your son play baseball?
Since I coached him when he was 6 or 7.
And at this point, I'm somewhat familiar with college sports. And it's a unique opportunity for a young man to play baseball at the college level, is it?
It's
not that every member of a high school baseball team gets to play at a college level. It's a unique opportunity.
Yes.
We don't know whether your son's going to play next year for sure. We think he is, right?
Yes.
And this is an opportunity. And when I talk about hardship with you, I don't want to talk about just that your life's going to end, or it's going to be an emotion, it's going to be a terrible struggle, and that you're not going to be able to overcome this. That's not necessarily the entire definition of hardship in my mind. It's also emotional. It's also understanding that you raised a child from a very young age and you are his coach, and that this is a very unique opportunity. And some of these folks are talking about family reunions and their mother's birthdays and events where people have to spend time and important events in people's lives. And I can see, obviously, that this is having an impact on you because you truly want to watch your son play baseball. Is that fair?
That's fair.
And you want to be there. And in terms of, it may not be the end of your life. It may not cause you financial ruin when you raise this child. And you coached this child. And you probably taught this child how to hit a baseball. Is that fair?
Yes.
I don't know what position he plays. I don't know all the facts. But this is an important event. Do you agree with me? To watch your son go out there and watch him play?
Yes, it's important.
And it's something that you really want to do?
As much as I can. Obviously, I'd have to travel there too.
But you've already committed that you're going to. This isn't just a necessary, well, if I can, I'll get over there. This is a situation where when you came in to sign up for jury duty, you said, and you nodded your head, I have committed myself. I really want to see my son play baseball. And this is going to be an emotional hardship on me if I'm not permitted to watch my son play baseball. It may not ruin me financially. It may not cause me, to lose my life or some other tremendous situation. But if this is a significant event in my life, my son's life, would you agree with that?
Yes, sir.
Nor, in the interest of time, I would just object that this topic has been covered quite extensively at this point. We've got consistent answers from the chair already.
Well, Judge, I have a right to revisit this. I've talked about this hardship here. This gentleman, I think I should be allowed to elaborate. This is a hardship.
Well, I understand that, and I know the juror understands the situation and has thought about it. So, Mr. Pryor, let's just get to the point of whether or not this is going to rise to the level of a hardship where you would be unable to serve.
And the point is this, you would be able to serve, but in your mind, this is going to be an emotional hardship to have to serve, right?
Can you break down that question for me, please?
This is going to be an emotional hardship for you to serve.
I'm not sure how to answer that because I deal with stuff all the time and I get through it. So okay. To me, hardship sounds, I understand what you're saying. I'm allowed to answer like this. I know what a hardship is. Yes, it's going to affect me most. I don't want to be there, but it's not like a hardship.
Okay. Thank you for your honesty, sir.
All right. At this point, then, there are some additional topics the court's going to address. The server's requested privacy, which the court will grant. So we're going to stop the live stream of the proceedings, and I'm going to have the public excuse from the courtroom. Further inquiry on voir dire with this particular juror. So if everybody would allow for that for a moment, we'll go ahead and take just a quick break to clear the courtroom and stop the proceeding, and then we'll continue right on with this juror. All right, we are back on the record on this case. Just so I match up and make sure I'm clear with the jurors who are still here, please raise your red cards. All right, thank you. All right, we've concluded voir dire of this particular group of jurors. These are jurors that would, in the court's mind, be passing on to peremptory strike section of the trial. Let me inquire now, having confirmed who's returned here and gone to the voir dire. Does the state pass this group for cause?
Yes, Your Honor.
Does the defense pass this group for cause?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury here then, you have been passed for cause. We'll continue to question additional small groups until we reach the necessary number of jurors we need to exercise peremptory challenges. You'll be instructed to contact the jury commissioner, Randy Rutland, and he will give you further instructions on when you are going to be required to return. While you're waiting for that, and in that interim, if anything comes up you need to report to the court, you can do that. And in addition, please take every precaution to follow the admonition given before to not now go and research the case, look into the case, try to find out about the case. Don't talk about the facts or details of this case with anyone other than, of course, you can talk to friends, family, employers, et cetera, about the possibility of your service in this case as jurors and make those arrangements. But otherwise, the court will be requiring you to submit an affirmation under oath when you return that you have not gone and done any kind of additional investigation into the case, which could bias or taint you and cause us to lose the work we've done today. So we very much appreciate your service up to this point. You'll receive further instructions on when you will return for that next stage of the proceedings. And with that in mind, that will conclude our voir dire of this particular group. Before they're excused, to report back at another time, anything further from the state?
No, Your Honor, thank you.
From the defense?
No, Your Honor, thank you.
Okay, thank you. All please rise for the jury.
If you come back this way, you won't mind.
All right, a little later than noon, but we're going to take a lunch break at this time. We'll go off the record. We've got another group lined up. I'd like to very quickly meet with counsel just to discuss scheduling on our proposals to get restarted. And we'll just do that here in the back hall briefly. Okay, we're broadcasting at this time as well. We're already on the record. Ms. Blake, if the state has a motion, you can argue that at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor. The state had previously asked to be heard regarding two objections that came up during the last panel. The state wanted to be heard prior to bringing in the next group, anticipating that we may hear the same things. The two issues are that Mr. Pryor, counsel for defense, mentioned multiple times the four prosecutors. I do think that that is objectionable. I think it's outside the scope of the purpose of voir dire. I think it's also pandering to the jury essentially and serves no purpose as far as the voir dire process itself goes. So we would ask that he be prohibited from repeatedly referring to the four prosecutors and then himself as a lone defense counsel. In addition, the other objection dealt with, I think it only happened one time that I can think of, but Mr. Pryor made the comment that he believed his client was not guilty. Again, I think that's inappropriate to comment on that, to comment on what his personal beliefs are with regard to that, and also would be outside of the scope of voir dire and serve no purpose for the voir dire proceedings.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Blake. Two different motions there. Mr. Pryor, if you'd like to respond first to the state's objection, you're referring to the four prosecutors.
Sir, Judge, if you have some suggested language for me in terms of how I'm supposed to refer to them, I'll be glad to take that language. But I don't see the prejudice of referring to four prosecutors on the other side of the table.
If the court feels that's prejudicial, then if you want to tell me exactly how I'm supposed to refer to those folks, I'll be glad to do that. But I see that's a little. I feel like the prosecutor's picking on an issue. And they feel there's prejudice there. Then the judge struck me out. You want me to address those folks? And as far as the other issue is concerned, Judge, I'll temper my response and ensure that I advise them in a less than definitive manner in terms of the other issue.
All right. Well, in terms of the first motion, I'm not going to prohibit some mention or reference to four prosecutors. That's who's at the table. The jurors are going to see that anyway. If it is being referred to unnecessarily or in a way that's irrelevant to the procedures or selecting jurors in the voir dire process, then the court will consider that under advisement. But I'm not going to prohibit a reference to what they're already seeing. It was said, it was repeatedly made, perhaps in a way to try to garner sympathy. It looks like it's rising to that level. I'll reconsider it. You may either re-raise the objection, Ms. Blake, or I may speak up and advise counsel that we would consider that to refrain from that reference. But in general terms, it's not going to be prohibited. In terms of the statement that was probably what would be framed as vouching, then Mr. Pryor would be correct that that's an improper kind of statement to vouch for your client personally or make an unqualified statement such as that. You've indicated you'll refrain from that, so the state would grant the objection on that and instruct that there are not be further references where you are vouching for the innocence of your client. So that'll be the court's ruling on both motions. Ms. Blake, do you have any questions on that court ruling?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the defense?
No, Judge, is it permissible for me not to advise, but the court preferred that I advise?
It's fine if you don't, Mr. Pryor. That probably helps with the audio, actually, if you just go into the microphone remaining seated, so I have no objection to you.
I want to make sure I'm not being disrespectful.
All right, no taken. One more thing we'll put on the record before we get started with the next group. One of the jurors mistakenly noted a number that's not their number on the questionnaire, and we wanted to advise you of that. So on the seating chart, we've got juror 841, and actually so 465 is the questionnaire. That's the number on the questionnaire, is that correct? You've got a questionnaire with the juror number 465. That is actually going to be red card juror number 841. So when they're in here, they should have a red card 841 that corresponds to the questionnaire 465.
Which may I make a point of inquiry? Was the 465 on the five the questionnaire? Is that the number on the questionnaire, or are they actually an 841?
That is the number on the questionnaire. So the questionnaire reads 465. However, that is actually juror 841. You're welcome. All right, counsel. Took a while on that last group. To the extent we can make it any more efficient or move more quickly, I do intend to get through this group today. They've been waiting since this afternoon. So we will proceed first with the court's voir dire, then on to counsel. If everyone's ready, then we'll go ahead and have this next group of 16 brought in for voir dire. So instruct the marshals to have the jurors brought in, please.
Yes, sir. All right, please. Can we go here, Your Honor?
All right, thank you. Please be seated. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for returning. Apologies for the delay this afternoon. I'm going to first, if we would do this, just to give counsel and the court an opportunity to confirm your seating arrangement that it corresponds with our chart. If you don't mind, if each of you would please just hold your red card up for a moment and give us a moment to review our charts, then we'll move on from there. All right, thank you. First, counsel, I will remind you, please only refer to jurors by their red card numbers, not by name. As I mentioned previously, we are here to select a total of 12 jurors plus 6 alternates for trial. So we're going to have the total number of 50 prospective jurors to get to peremptory challenges. The court's going to conduct its own voir dire, and I'll request the counsel not repeat questions the court's already asked. We are now broadcasting the proceedings. We are on the record on KCR 22-21-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. I'll note Mr. Daybell is present, as well as his attorney, Mr. Pryor. The state's here, represented by Mr. Wood, Ms. Blake, Ms. Beatty, and Mr. Wixom. First question I'll ask of counsel, beginning with the state, is there any objection to the manner in which the jury panel has been recalled and seated today?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Any objection from the defense?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for returning this afternoon. You've been recalled as prospective jurors in this case. In this case, I'm Stephen W. Boyce, the district judge of Fremont County, Idaho, and I'm in charge of the courtroom in this trial. My court clerk to the right is Shannon Holstein, who is keeping minutes of this proceeding and will also be administering oaths to you as jurors. We've got our courtroom marshals here, Mr. Holmes, Beige, and Ravello, who will work with keeping order in the courtroom as well as helping you as jurors move about. The court reporter, Mary Fox, is seated down to my left, and she's keeping a stenographic record of everything said in these proceedings. And my staff attorney, Courtney Stallings, is seated to the far right against the wall, and she assists me with legal research and administrative issues that come up throughout the day. Each one of you is qualified to serve as a juror of this court, and you filled out a questionnaire that we have now reviewed. We are going to go through this process in an effort to select 18 jurors, which will compromise 12 trial jurors and 6 alternates. The clerk at this time now, using the red card number, will please make a roll call of the jurors.
Please answer audibly when I list your number. Juror 440.
Here.
Juror 465?
Here.
Juror 496?
Here.
Juror 505?
Here.
Juror 526?
Here.
Juror 536?
Here.
Juror 539?
Here.
Juror 544?
Here.
Juror 591?
Here.
Juror 617?
Here.
Juror 631?
Here.
Juror 641?
Here.
Juror 647?
Here.
Juror 653?
Here.
Juror 686?
Here.
Juror 740?
Here.
All right, thank you. For jurors that did not appear, the court will indicate an admonishment that they may be subject to fines or jail time under Idaho Code 7610 and Idaho Code 22085. So for those of you who did appear today in this group of 16, thank you for returning. To assist you in understanding and participating in this jury selection process, again, I'll reintroduce you to the parties and the lawyers and summarize briefly what the case is about. When I introduce an individual, please stand and briefly face the jury panel, then take your seat. The case has been brought by the state of Idaho, sometimes referred to as the prosecution. State's represented at this trial by Fremont County Prosecutor Lindsay Blake, Madison County Prosecutor Rob Wood, Specially Appointed Prosecutor Eva Beatty, and Deputy Prosecutor Rocky Wixom. The defendant is Chad Guy Daybell, and he's represented by his attorney, John Pryor. This case is a criminal matter, which means the defendant has been charged by the state of Idaho with a violation of the law. I previously read to you a summary of the charges contained in the amended indictment when you were here last week to complete your questionnaires. With regard to the defendant, the state of Idaho has alleged that he committed the following crimes. Count one, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count two, first-degree murder. Count three, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count four, first-degree murder. Count five, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Count six, first-degree murder. Count seven, insurance fraud. Count nine, insurance fraud. Mr. Daybell has pled not guilty to the charges. Please remember this is simply a description of the charges. It is not evidence. Under our law and system of justice, every defendant is presumed to be innocent. This means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial. The defendant is never required to prove his innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, The state must prove the alleged crime beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from a lack of evidence. If after considering all the evidence, you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. The duty of the jury is to determine the facts and then apply the law set forth in the instructions I'll later give you to those facts. In this way, you'll decide the case. In applying the court's instructions to the controlling law, you must follow those instructions regardless of your opinion of what the law is, what the law should be, or what any lawyer may state the law to be. During the course of this trial, including the jury selection process, you are instructed that you are not to discuss this case among yourselves or with anyone else, including by use of email, text messaging, social media, or any other form of communication, electronic or otherwise. Do not conduct any personal investigation or look up any information from any source, including the internet. Don't form an opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your determination. At this time, then, I am going to request that our clerk administer an oath to the entire jury panel. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd please stand and raise your right hands, I'll have the clerk administer this oath.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that you will truthfully answer such questions as may be asked of you by court or counsel, touching upon your qualifications to sit as a trial juror in the cause known trial? So help you God.
All right, thank you. Please be seated. Our record will reflect that all jurors were placed under oath. The clerk has now impaneled 16 prospective jurors for questioning in small group today. Will the state stipulate the jurors have been properly called and impaneled?
Yes, Your Honor.
Will the defense stipulate?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. These jurors were sent home last week after completing the questionnaire and then provided an affirmation that they have not gone and researched or looked into the case between now and then, nor discussed it with anyone. Let me inquire next of our bailiffs. Do we know if a juror affirmation has been completed by this group?
Yes, Your Honor, and confirmed.
Okay. Thank you for following the court's admonishment of not looking into the case during that intervening time period. In this part of the jury selection, then, you're going to be asked questions touching on your qualifications to serve as jurors in this particular case. This part of the case is known as the voir dire examination. Voir dire is an ancient Anglo-Norman term dating back hundreds of years to origins of the common law, and in French, it simply means to speak the truth. Voir dire examination is for the purpose of determining if your decision in this case would in any way be influenced by opinions which you now hold or by some personal experience or special knowledge which you may have concerning the subject matter to be tried. The object is to obtain 12 persons who will impartially try the issues of this case upon the evidence presented in this courtroom without being influenced by any other factors. Please understand the questioning is not for the purpose of prying into your personal affairs, but only for the purpose of obtaining an impartial jury. Whenever you need to answer a question, please raise your red card number. When you're called upon to speak, identify yourself with that number. And since we're making a stenographic recording of the proceedings, please make audible verbal responses and try to avoid speaking at the same time as anyone else talking to you. That way, our court reporter will be able to keep a clear record. If any answer to a question would be embarrassing or uncomfortable for you to answer publicly, and I will note this proceeding is being live streamed, then please let me know and we're able to discuss those issues with you in a more private setting outside of the public purview. Similarly, if your answer to any question may prejudice other prospective jurors, please let me know, and we'll also discuss that issue outside of the presence of your fellow jurors. Additionally, many of you may have knowledge of this case from pretrial media coverage and publicity. Please do not discuss any specific facts or details of this case in front of the other jurors in this pool. We can discuss those matters with you individually as needed. I'll now read to you a special instruction in this case, which is as follows. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, has been charged in the amended indictment with certain counts of entering into a conspiracy with Lori Vallow Daybell and or Alex Cox. The crime of conspiracy involves an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. You must only consider the evidence against the defendant in this case and should not speculate as to any other case or legal proceedings involving the alleged co-conspirators. You must remember that the defendant has the presumption of innocence, and you must consider his guilt or innocence based solely on the evidence provided in this case. That concludes the court's special instruction. At this time, I would instruct the attorneys for both parties to avoid repeating any questions already asked. The attorneys do have the right, however, to direct follow-up questions to a juror regarding responses they've made to previous questions. The jury should be aware that during and following the voir dire examination, one or more of you may be challenged. Each side has challenges called for cause, which means they can ask a juror be excused for some specific reason. In addition, each side has a certain number of what are called peremptory challenges, meaning they can ask a juror be excused without giving a reason for that dismissal. If you are excused by either side, please do not feel offended or feel that your honesty or integrity has been questioned, because it has not. At this time, then, the court will begin with its portion of the voir dire process, after which the attorneys for both parties will be given an opportunity to make their own inquiries. When you are being, when other jurors are being asked certain questions, please pay attention, because you may later be called upon to answer those same questions. The first question I'll ask then relates to your jury questionnaires, which you filled out. Let me just ask the group here, are the answers given by each of you on the jury information form still true and accurate? If you would say yes, please raise your red card. Okay, everyone responded affirmatively. To the best of your knowledge, are those answers in your questionnaires also still accurate and true at this time? If yes, raise your card. Everyone said yes. Next question the court will get to is the time commitment that may be required if you are serving on this case. As you were told last week, it would be for a period of approximately 8 to 10 weeks. Would that time of service create a serious hardship upon you or your family or your business or profession or occupation so as to prevent you from rendering service as a fair and impartial juror in this case? If you think that applies to you, please raise your red card. Okay, we've got two jurors, three jurors, 641, 544, and 496. Let me take those up individually with you. So starting with juror number 496. You've mentioned in your questionnaire you are out of town for work, both in April and May. Can you explain a little further about those circumstances?
Yes, I have a training going on to, essentially it's related to work, but I'm traveling to Arizona.
All right, would you be able to have anyone else cover, or would you be able to reschedule those commitments?
Sure. It could be rescheduled, but they're committed to prior to this case. I've committed to them prior.
What would be the impact on you if you were required to serve as a juror in this case and missed? And to be clear, these are two separate trips, both planned. Is that correct? If you miss both of them, where would that leave you?
I would need a reschedule, which would be my tickets often. Trips, reschedule.
All right. I think it would be appropriate at this point for me to allow counsel to step in and ask additional questions as it relates to the hardship expressed, beginning with the state.
Your Honor, the state also had noted those planned trips and had intended to inquire of those today. Given that additional information and the expenses associated with that, the state would make a motion to excuse this juror for cause for hardship.
Judge Austin.
All right, thank you, Mr. Pryor, Ms. Blake. The court's considered the information provided today, including what you filled out in the questionnaire and your responses. Juror 496, the court will find that you may be excused for cause for purposes of the hardship you would endure if you were required to serve here. So you can be excused. Thank you for reporting. That concludes your jury service. Please drop off your questionnaire with the bailiff as you exit. And then in a moment, we'll take up our next juror that had a concern. All right, let's next talk to juror number 544. You didn't have a whole lot of detail in your questionnaire. It said you had a wedding in Atlanta. And can you explain to the court more about when that would be?
That would be April 18th to the 20th.
And can you indicate whose wedding that would be?
It is my nephew.
Have you made any prearranged purchases for that trip at this point?
Yes, I have. I actually have purchased the airline ticket before I had gotten the summons.
They're willing to move the wedding out a couple of months for you?
It's kind of hard to do.
All right. I'm going to ask the state at this point if they have any questions about the purported hardship here for this juror.
Your Honor, the state also had a note on this one, and we did note there was a wedding in Atlanta. We just were unclear on the dates of that. With that additional information regarding the dates and the purchased airfare, the state would make a motion to excuse this juror for a cause for a hardship.
All right, response from the defense.
Judge Ellen.
All right, well, juror 544, as I mentioned last year, he will be excused based on your request to not serve at this time for a hardship that would occur if you remain. Thank you for coming in, completing the questionnaires, returning today, and your jury service is completed and you can be excused. Please drop your questionnaire off to the marshal on your way.
Thank you.
We'll next talk to juror number 641. You've got a vacation in May to visit some elderly grandparents, it looks like. Juror 641, can you provide a little more detail about that?
My vacation is scheduled for May 18th. I'll be there until the end of the month. I've already scheduled time off of work, which would be very hard to move. And the expense of that would total out to about $272 for the plane ticket, which I purchased in advance, and then a train ticket to visit a family friend who was recently diagnosed.
And that's incorporated in the same trip?
Yes, yeah.
All right, as to juror 641, does the state have any additional questions?
Your Honor, we also had a note here to follow up regarding that vacation in May. Again, just not a lot of information.
In addition, I'd note there was an indication that there was some concern about interruption of school and work. I think given all of that, the state would make a motion to excuse juror 641 for cause for a hardship.
All right, response from the defense? Okay, juror 641, you are excused based on your request of a hardship. The court determines that you won't be required to serve for this case. Thank you for reporting, for completing your questionnaire and returning today. Please drop that questionnaire off with the bailiff as you exit. For those jurors remaining, did anyone else have a concern about the length this trial may take? All right, and understandably, it's a difficult circumstance for all of us, anyone, and we do have one more now, 539. All right, juror number 539, if you'll give me a moment. All right, can you please explain a little more about your family situation that you believe indicates a hardship here?
I have two vacations planned that are each about a week long. One is May, I think 18th to 24th, 25th, and I'm also the primary caretaker for a 2-year-old.
The May. Well, both, and when is the second vacation plan?
June 1st through 7th.
All right. Are either or both of those already pre-purchased or just planned?
The first one is already purchased.
And can you provide a little more detail about your commitment to child care with the 2-year-old?
Yeah, I'm a stay-at-home mom, so I take care of him all day long. So I'd have to find alternate child care for him during the hours that the trip takes place. And that's pretty hard to secure child care around here, like this minute. lots of waiting lists.
In this case, there's a potential of being sequestered for some time, meaning you would be away from the two-year-old for perhaps a week or even longer. What would occur if you were required to be sequestered?
That'd be really hard for him, and I'm not sure what I would do with that. My husband works that. So he has weird hours.
And do you believe that would become a significant distraction for you if you were concerned about that while being sequestered?
Yeah, he has trouble that.
All right, let me ask the state if there's any follow-up on these requests for excuse for hardship.
Similarly, Your Honor, the state had already made notes of those two planned trips. Again, we didn't have details if they had been already purchased or not, and we did have the note regarding her young child and that she was a stay-at-home mom to follow up on. Given that additional information provided by her today, the state would make a motion to excuse juror number 539 for cause for hardship.
All right, Mr. Pryor.
Judge, I will stipulate for me.
Okay, juror 539, courts considered the stipulation of the parties as well as your request, which you did request for in your questionnaire. Based on those reasons already stated on the record, you may be excused. Thank you for coming in and serving and filling out your questionnaire. You can drop the copy off with the bailiff on your way out. All right, unless there's any other concerns from the jury pool, we'll move on to another subject at this time. And again, thank you for your willingness to commit that amount of time in serving on this case if you're called. The next issue we're going to discuss is pretrial publicity or your knowledge of this case. The court would note there has been extensive news coverage of the case and other in a lot of different published in a lot of different forums. The instruction I read previously and what I want is to not go into any discussion of any facts or details you know about the case at this stage, because we'll talk to you individually about that so other jurors don't hear what you already know. But with that in mind, if you do have some prior knowledge of this case, and by knowledge, I mean not just heard of the case, but know about it in any detail, would you please raise your red card at this time?
That's a good question.
Yes.
You say in detail, beyond what's been on TV, at the news and stuff.
Well, we'll probably talk to you about that individually. I know it's a generic term that might mean different things to different people. Some people have followed this a lot. Some people have just heard it in passing. Some haven't heard anything about it at all. So have you actively followed it at all? Okay, but you have heard about the case somewhat. Okay, we will ask you some further questions about that individually. Anyone else who has any knowledge of the case or, okay, 505 and 740-591. Okay, for you that listed your or raised your card up there on that, we are going to ask you some specific questions individually. The next topic I'll move on to relates to the subject matter of this case. Would the subject matter of this case, which involves charges filed by the state of murder, conspiracy, and insurance fraud, would that subject matter make it impossible or difficult for you to fairly and objectively evaluate the evidence in this case and render a fair and impartial verdict? All right, no jurors answered yes to that. I'll next ask some questions that may seem obvious, and we've reviewed your questionnaires, but they're required under Idaho law for me to make sure there's no improper or appearance of improper relationship or connection to this case. So, are any of you related by blood or marriage to the defendant, or do you know him from any kind of business or social relationship? No affirmative answers. Do any of you have any kind of a relationship such as guardian and ward, master and servant, employer and employee, creditor and debtor, landlord and tenant, boarder or lodger between you and any of the attorneys in this case? Are any of you, and I'll note no affirmative response there, are any of you a party in any civil action against the defendant, Mr. Daybell? No one answered affirmatively. Have any of you ever brought a criminal complaint against the defendant or been accused of some crime by any of the prosecutors that are present here, including Ms. Blake, Mr. Wood, Ms. Beatty, or Mr. Wixom? No one answered affirmatively to that. Do any of you here have any kind of an attorney-client relationship or business dealing with Mr. Pryor or his law firm? No one answered affirmatively to that. Are any of you related by blood or marriage to any of the lawyers, or do any of you know any of the lawyers from any professional, business, or social relationship? All right, no one indicates they know any of the lawyers. This next question, you could just answer yes or no. If the answer is yes, we'll talk to you about this individually, but have any of you formed or expressed an unqualified opinion that the defendant is guilty or is not guilty of the offenses in this case? All right, we've got one card, number 591. We responded to that. We'll ask you more about what opinion you may have individually. Anyone else already formed some type of an opinion in reference to the defendant's guilt or innocence? Do any of you have any particular bias or prejudice either for or against Mr. Daybell as you sit here? No one answered affirmatively to that. Are there any of you who would be unwilling to follow my instructions to you as the jury as to the law that you must apply in determining this case? All right, no one said yes. Do any of you have a religious or moral position that would make it impossible for you to sit in judgment of another or to render a fair and impartial verdict? Okay, no one answered affirmatively to that. And then, are there any of you that, if selected as a juror in this case, would be unwilling or unable to render a fair and impartial verdict based upon the evidence presented in this courtroom and the laws instructed by the court? No one answered affirmatively to that. A final kind of catch-all question here. Do any of you have any other reason why you cannot give this case your undivided attention and render a fair and impartial verdict? All right, we have one juror raised their card, juror 465. Is that something you wish to discuss here? Do you think that's more appropriate individually?
Here is mine.
Okay, what would be a reason you believe you couldn't give the case your undivided attention?
I work nights and usually wake up around 12. Yeah.
And I'll just tell you that with our schedule, even though it doesn't look like much in my experience, this will be, it would be very difficult, if not impossible, for somebody to maintain a night shift and do trial in the day. I don't see that as feasible. So is that something you were considering when it got to the hardship question?
Yes.
Okay. So you were under the thought maybe you could work in the evenings, do this in the day?
It's more of when's the usual start time? Or
8:30.
That'd be like at 3 at night.
And I guess the question is, would you be able to not do your job while this case is going for 10 weeks? Because I kind of think that is what it's going to take for you to have the mental capacity to do this.
I'd be falling asleep during.
Okay. Let's go back to that question then on employment for juror number, I'm sorry, could you hold your card up again? 465. I'm going to let the state inquire at this point if you would about employment and a potential hardship here.
Your Honor, given the information provided by juror 465, the state would make a motion to excuse him for a cause based on a hardship.
Response from the defense, Mr. All right, and just to be clear, you are employed at that job full time, and that's your sole source of income?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and if you were required to essentially quit your job for the 10-week time period, would that result in a financial hardship for you?
No, sir. It's the capability of saying when you're in trial.
Okay, I guess there's been a stipulation. I just want to be clear on that. I guess what I'm saying is likely you wouldn't be able to work during that time frame So if you weren't working, in other words, if you had to quit that job to do this trial, where would that leave you?
Pretty bad.
Okay. All right. Well, I've considered the responses also, the non-opposition motion from both parties. And I would find that with that in mind, your 465, I think it would be a hardship for you to be required to serve in this case, given the time frame and your employment situation. So for that reason, your 465 will be excused based on a hardship. Thank you for serving and filling out your questionnaire. You can drop that questionnaire off at the bailiff as you exit. All right, I'm almost concluded with my section of voir dire, but I'll go back and just re-ask that same question since we went through that with that juror, having listened to that. Do any other jurors here have a concern that they would not be able to give this case their undivided attention and render a fair and impartial verdict? All right, that will conclude the court section of voir dire for this panel. I'll turn this over now for the state. If you'd like to conduct your voir dire inquiry, who will be doing that?
I will.
All right, Mr. Wood.
Ladies and gentlemen, again, my name is Rob Wood. I represent Madison County, Idaho. Thank you for being here. And as just as a reminder, the judge said, if I ask you a question and you feel like you'd rather answer it privately, just let us know. We want you to be comfortable. And there's no wrong answers here. How you feel is how you feel. And we need to know that so that this defendant and so that the state can have a fair trial. And so, but juror 505, when I say brutal honesty, what does that mean to you?
He's being very direct.
Telling it like it is.
Yep.
Will you all commit that you'll be brutally honest in your response, your responses with us? You'll tell us how you actually feel. Juror 647, do I see some hesitation? Yeah, you kind of tilted your head and looked at me like maybe not.
Oh, no, I have four kids.
Okay, so you can be honest.
Kids are
eight. I shouldn't say honest. You can be forthright with this, right? Okay. There were a couple of jurors that did list a hardship. This mic is feeding back. But you didn't raise your hands when we were talking about it earlier. So if it's all right, I'm just going to ask a couple of you about that. Juror 686, and you know, I apologize, you're not one of the ones I was talking about. Juror 631, you're a medical technician, correct?
Yeah.
And on your questionnaire, it said it may be a hardship for you that equipment at a specific hospital may not be maintained. Is that accurate?
Possibly. I was the only technician trained on this specific equipment at the hospital.
Oh.
I've already spoken with them, and they're calling the manufacturer.
Okay, so you've taken care of that, so that if you can't, there, someone else can.
Yep.
Perfect, thank you. Juror 653, you had mentioned on your questionnaire it could be a financial hardship for you to take time to be on this jury. Is that still accurate? Okay, so you've been able to take care of that. Perfect, thank you. Just want to talk to you really quick. As the court mentioned, we're going to get into what you've seen on the media individually later. But just really quick, does anybody here believe everything they read online? Nobody believes anything they read online? So we're all aware that sometimes there's information out there that's not true. Do you all agree with that? And what about news on the TV? Does anybody here believe everything they hear on the news? And to be clear, I'm not saying that in any way to diminish the news, just sometimes facts change, right? And we might think one thing one day and then we learn another fact another day. Has everybody seen that in their lives? And so, this is so important. Can you all commit to this court, to the state, to this defendant, that what you have seen, that you'll put that aside and you'll only rely on what you learn in this court? The court talked briefly about the nature of this case and asked if the nature of this case would preclude anyone from feeling like they could serve on this jury. And just to get into to follow up on that, this is a case that involves the deaths of two minor children and a mother. And there is going to be some evidence, some autopsy photos that is absolutely difficult to look at. Is there anybody here who feels like looking at that type of material will render them unable to render a part impartial verdict, and that it would sway them one way or another? 591, thank you for being honest. Tell me how you feel about that.
I may get emotional if I do, but I'm a retired school teacher and I've spent my whole life trying to keep kids safe. And that, and, you know, really everybody's safe, but beyond that, I have a very vivid imagination, or I'm a very visual person. It's really more correct. So no matter what you say, I picture it already. So I'm already living in movies, you know, so because of that, I don't watch anything violent. I don't watch action movies or anything because they stay with me and create a lot of anxiety. So, and you know, people say, well, stop picturing it. Well, it's there, it just happens, and it has my whole life. It does cause me, I've already lost about a week of sleep over this.
Well, and I noticed you mentioned that in your questionnaire, the vivid kind of reliving of these things. Is that a fair characterization?
Yes.
I don't want to put words in
your mouth. I have dreams, but loop. And I've had counseling, things like that, and I can get a hold of them, but when it comes to violence, I don't want to say it's a character flaw because it doesn't feel like a flaw to me. It feels like it's a warning. And I'm also very intuitive, which I'm not saying that I would be able to intuit everything, but I don't know. It's like I have a different sense about me, and causes a lot of anxiety.
Okay. And I noticed you mentioned that as well in your questionnaire.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for your honesty. I appreciate that. Judge, at this time, I would ask that juror 591 be excused for cause.
Response from the defense.
Judge, can I just inquire?
Yes, you may.
Ma'am, I'm John Pryor. I'm representing Mr. Dave Bell today. And I want to make it clear I am required to ask you questions. And I don't want you to believe that any of these questions suggest that Mr. Daybell is guilty or anything like that, but if they're just questions we have to ask, would that be okay with you? There are going to be very graphic pictures here, and they're going to be disturbing to everybody, and they're going to be very, very emotional. And one of the concerns we have is that when you look at those pictures, will you immediately assign those pictures to Mr. Daybell and assume that he's guilty because of the nature and the graphic nature of those pictures? Or would you be able to look at those pictures and say, it's evidence?
I can maybe keep it to evidence, but what my concern is my how I'm going to continue to function during.
And this is going to cause you some emotional distress.
Yes.
With your association with children, having someone who's worked very hard to protect children your entire life, I can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
If you see those, it would be very difficult. Even if the court instructed you that, you know, you were supposed to look at these and not judge them or be inflamed or you know, overwhelmed by those, you're supposed to look at them for what they are and continue to look at all the evidence. That's going to be a difficult task for you. Do you say that's the case?
Yes.
Judge, I'll stipulate.
All right. Juror 591, just, I guess, a final bit of inquiry from me. I guess what I'm hearing is you think you may get upset to the point where you're not able to pull things back together and think clearly after that? Okay. And
I wish it wasn't true, but I mean, it is, so.
Sure. Different people react different ways. That's why we go through this process. Thank you for your candor to the court in these questionings. I do agree that for this juror with this particular trial, she should be excused based on that nature of the evidence that will be presented here. And so for juror 591, the court is going to grant the motion to strike for cause. And we appreciate your taking the time to fill out your questionnaire and return today. Your jury service is concluded with the thanks of the court. You can drop your questionnaire with the bailiff.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for a dollar. Because saving with deals is always on the menu. With new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.